Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Kaliole Colonna. Do you have faith in the systems? How has government response to the pandemic eroded or reinforced that for you? It seemed important in back in what we collectively refer to as normal times, but what have public officials done to instill our faith? We have a long list of pre-pandemic ills that plague us during this plague. Today, I talk with the Secretary of State about what it takes for politicians to keep voters invested and journalists about why there is a lack of faith and whether it can be restored. We're going to jump right to it today. Find our usual news update online at KUNM.org. My next guest is the Secretary of State for the great state of New Mexico, Maggie Toulouse Oliver. Madam Secretary, thanks for being with me.
It is my pleasure.
It's a very crazy election. We've got COVID-19 happening. Scientists are predicting a second wave is going to hit, and we'll be in the thick of it during the middle of the general election. Is the state prepared to move forward with the election while ensuring everyone's safety? Do we have a plan, and what does that plan look like?
Well, I think that this primary election is not a good example of what it could look like in November if we had what we had been calling for in April before the Supreme Court, which was just to mail a ballot automatically out to every registered voter. Instead, for this election, the Supreme Court mandated that an application be mailed to every registered voter, which meant that the resources dedicated to printing and mailing those were doubled. And then, of course, the action on the part of the voter was doubled. The activity on part of the post office was doubled. Instead, in November, if we are able to prepare in advance and get those ballots in the mail as soon as we are statutorily able to, that will absolutely streamline the process, make it substantially more efficient and more effective for every single registered voter in the state.
Okay. You've run for office before. You've had the experience of connecting with your voters. COVID-19 has changed that up. Rallies and meetings are currently untenable. Do you feel that it's the obligation of incumbents and newcomers running for office to really connect with their constituents so they understand where they lie on a ton of issues that we're seeing are some parts life or death decisions?
I think trust in government is absolutely essential for a healthy democracy. And having that interpersonal connection with and dialogue with one's constituents and the folks that live in the larger community is essential to building and maintaining that trust. So for example, I've been engaging in a variety of forums, you know, Facebook Live, Instagram Live, and on a variety of social networks and other platforms to do my best to help get the word out about the election and about how folks can vote where, when, and how they can cast their ballots, how they can get election information. In fact, it's been kind of lovely because I almost feel like I've been able to do more of that because I don't have to drive from Santa Fe to Las Cruces, right, which is a drive that I actually really love to do and love the community down there. The flip side and the downside to that, of course, is that not everybody in the state has access to the internet. Sometimes it's limited to a mobile phone. And so I think the pandemic is emphasizing a lot of the already existing challenges we have in New Mexico, among them the digital divide. And we must do better. We have to do better as a state to try to bridge that gap, particularly because the evidence suggests that we may very well continue in this mode for quite some time to come until there is a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have this election. A lot of times when general election cycles come around, people tend to think only purely of the Senate races, the House races, and the presidential race. But we're understanding and we're seeing the importance of local leadership and who people decide to represent them on a local and statewide basis. I mean, talk to me about the importance of these local races and local political leaders and the decisions you all have to make that affect people's lives on a daily basis.
These kinds of situations, these tremendous challenges, like the pandemic that we're dealing with right now, I think really put a fine point and really bring out for folks and show folks how important their local leadership really is at the statewide level, at the state representative and district level, and at the county level. And if you didn't understand before how the decisions of your state and local government impacted your life on a daily basis, I do believe a silver lining of the pandemic if I can say this, is that I think that folks' awareness has grown tremendously around how important these offices are and how much power they have. And what I hope that does more than anything else is bring people out to the polls, that it sparks their interest in these races, makes them want to do their homework and elect somebody who they feel best represents their interest. And that is the best that we can ever hope for in our democracy.
She is the Secretary of State for the great state of New Mexico, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver. Thanks again for being with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
My next guest I've been excited to have on the show for some time. I'd like to welcome the host of the flagship show for New Mexico PBS, New Mexico In Focus, to the show, Mr. Gene Grant. Gene, welcome.
Hey, Khalil.
How are you?
Not bad. Great to be here, man.
So today we're talking about faith in the system. Where do you think the people's faith lies right now?
Right now, probably in the same place it's been for the last half generation, like pretty lousy and not in a place of trust. I think part of the problem is people don't trust our government. They don't trust they're going to get value for their tax dollar. They don't trust they're going to get the kind of help they feel like they'll need to get when things get tough. They just don't trust it. And then the other side of it, mistrust. When you've got, you know, lack of trust on one side of the deal combined with just flat out hostility on the other side, it's just going to be a mess at some point. I think people are sort of waiting for a moment to feel good about government again in some levels, but it just hasn't happened yet. And I don't know what it's going to take, but I don't see it on the horizon at this point.
You mentioned waiting for a moment. Do you think that it was a missed opportunity in how the federal government approached the handling of this pandemic that we're all in the midst of suffering under?
It was a miss. There's just no way to say it. It's not even looking back that far. No, we don't need 2 years down the road to look back to figure out it was a miss. It was a miss. And we tried something that it just... it's never going to work, and that is trying to have certain things both ways. We cherish our freedoms. We like it. We've earned it. It's an American thing. We all sort of get it at our own certain level, in our own certain way. But at the same time, there is a moment for people to rally. That comes with leadership, and that comes from our government. I keep thinking about, this is kind of a weird thought. I think Trump missed a moment where he could have been like, you know what? I'm going to break this mask thing open. I'm actually going to flip the script on this thing. We're going to mask this thing up. We're going to make it a patriotic deal. We're going to get celebrities involved. We're going to make a thing out of it. Everyone's going to start making them. We're going to knock this thing down in 3 months, and then we're going to be back in business, and America's going to get cooking again. He had that option.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With a lift of his finger, people who follow this guy do anything. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it just, it was an opportunity missed. Now, there's a lot of reasons why he was never going to do that. Believe me, it's a pipe dream.
People tend to forget that elected officials are public servants. You do have the right to go up and address your elected officials because they work for you. But you also said something that made me really think. Mm-hmm. We cannot ignore what's happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota right now, or in Louisville, right, or in Los Angeles, or even what took place a little bit here last night with the murder of Mr. George Floyd and people's protesting. And we're looking at racial injustice, and we're talking about faith in the system. You can go to a lot of black and brown people, and I think you can go to a lot of women and ask them if they've had faith in the system, and a lot of them can tell you no. We absolutely don't. But how important is it that we truly pay attention to not only what we can do as citizens in organizing with each other, but getting across a message, not just to the federal representatives, but to the local representatives?
It's like a constant pressure campaign. It's an unrelenting, focused, passionate, all that kind of stuff that sounds almost cliched now because people talk about this a lot. But sometimes it's the basic blocking and tackling that gets it done. And that really is the way. I mean, for me, you know, my great frustration is, okay, you can have a lot of things coming their way and a lot of energy from the public coming a certain way. What are the mechanisms that it's being received? You know, I love your point about they are always on the clock. That is part of the mechanism of receiving information, is that if someone has something to say,
yeah,
they have a right to respectfully find a way to say it. Part of the gig when you get elected is you should keep your yap shut and you listen to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is plenty of political and social vigor in this country by young people right now. No one's sitting back and waiting for things to change passively.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening now is our current generation is just looking for a lever. They're looking for a way to make change. And if it can't be at the ballot box immediate, then you're going to see things like happened on the streets last night in Minneapolis and St. Paul. You know, it's like King said that, you know, rioting is the screaming of the voiceless, you know, and No one likes it. No one likes it. But at the same time, no one should be shocked.
Yes. Yeah,
no one, you know, if you really step back from it, no matter how, where you're coming from in life, you know, at some point you're like, okay, something's got to give here somewhere at some point. So your point is that all institutions, law enforcement institutions, elected people, all the big institutions, education, I mean, you name it, everyone's got a problem right now with being credible out there. It's a real problem. And you have to really wonder how far a republic can really honestly go. You don't want to get dramatic about it, without a level of trust. I mean, nothing moves in this world without a level of trust.
Yeah. It's been such an honor and pleasure to talk with you, my friend. Thank you so much for being with me. Mr. Gene Grant, host of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Just about everything in the time of COVID has been politicized, and that puts holes in our belief in government. Earlier this week, I spoke with Catherine Lewin from the Santa Fe Reporter about how emergency relief money for small businesses were distributed. Here's part of that conversation. Speaking of government oversight, you talked about how the PPP loans are going to more states that supported Trump. How can that happen? What in the distribution of these monies makes that possible?
That was an analysis done by Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, which is a really great company that does some pretty incredible in-depth reporting. Yeah, and they found that of the $1.6 million loans, that a lot of those were going to Republican-run states. And how does it happen? I don't know. I think that's part of the, I don't know, the mystery, the ambiguity of this program. I know that I mentioned it somewhere in the story about Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. In a previous press conference, she was like, you know, the where this money is going is sort of ambiguous, and it's hard to know what's happening.
Yeah. And does it look like New Mexico got a fair share of this federal money for local business owners?
When I did the math, so it seems like New Mexico, at least through May 8th, which was the last numbers I looked at before this story published, that about 12% of New Mexico's small businesses got loans. So that's not a lot in comparison to some other places. I do have a link in the story to the Reveal Center. And so it has all 50 states and the percentages of what the states got. So, for example, according to Reveal's data, North Dakota, 58% of its small businesses got loans versus us.
At 12%.
At around 12%. So all 50 states are up there. It's really interesting data. I recommend people go and look at it.
This is Your NM Government. I'm your host, Kaliole Colonna. We're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Along with the slow reopening of the state, we've shifted our broadcast to 3 days a week. Tune in next week, Wednesday through Friday at 7 p.m. here on KUNM. We have a new time, but you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. Do you have faith in government? Are you questioning the system in general? We want to hear about your concerns and experiences. Call up our hotline, leave a message, and we'll interview you. Call 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. For more on the conversation of faith in government, I'm here with Santa Fe reporter Julia Goldberg. Julia, how's it going?
Hey, it's going all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. I'm making it through considering everything that's happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hear you.
You know, yesterday we were talking about issues that were focused on tribal lands and the primary coming up. But that made us think a little bit about the broader topic of people's faith in government systems right now, seeing that some are very happy with the government's response to the pandemic. Other ones have been decrying for some time for a reopening. Where do you think the faith level of just the general electorate is lying right now?
It's an interesting question. You know, and I think it really depends on if you're thinking about people's faith in the federal government versus the local government. There's an interesting study just last year from the Pew Research Center looking at this exact issue and kind of tracking Americans' faith in the federal government as being, you know, at an all-time high in the 50s down to 17% last year. 17% of Americans trusting the federal government to do the right thing most of the time. And the New York Times just a few days ago actually they interviewed more than 20 people who felt that government in Washington just was not rising to meet the challenge of the virus. Just the year before, if you had looked at Americans' view of local government, it was a completely different story. And 2/3 of them felt like they viewed their local government favorably. And I haven't seen any sort of comparable study to that during the pandemic, but I think it aligns somewhat anecdotally in terms of what we're seeing.
All politics is local. We understand, yes, the national election, the general election gets a lot of attention, but talk to me about the importance that people be truly educated and understand who they're voting for and some of the measures that they're voting on locally because of the impact it has on their lives.
Certainly. Well, I mean, we have a big, you know, it's a federal race, but, you know, the third congressional district race, you know, which includes Santa Fe, includes Gallup, includes Rio Riva, that's an open seat because Congressman Ben Ray Lucan is running for U.S. Senate. We have 7 candidates in that race. It's a big, it's a big race. And it was one that, like so many, got cut off and went online. And that's unfortunate, I think, for the candidates and for people, because it's just a harder race to follow in that realm. I went to, I think, 3 in-person forums before the lockdown, and then I think I've watched at least 4 of them online since then. And I think that that's a race that's going to have a big impact. Who is representing, you know, that district in Congress? It's going to make a big difference for an area like Gallup that's been so hard hit, that they have someone in that seat who really understands that area and really understands those needs. So that's an important one. And then you go right down the ballot. We have open county commission seats. Those end up, those commissioners make important decisions about land use, about policy. The funniest call I've had is someone called me a few days ago and was like, "What can you tell me about the county treasurer's race?" And they just sounded like, you know, they knew they should care, but how much time is anyone sitting around thinking about the county treasurer? I mean, in a good year, how much time do you want to spend thinking about that in the first place? But, you know, those are the people who, chances are, if you have some kind of local business or a local issue, it's going to their offices.
The governor yesterday has okayed for gyms, salons to reopen. Do you see that as a way to kind of appease, particularly what's been happening in southern parts of the state and in Farmington with some of the elected leaders, sheriffs and state representatives really pushing for a reopen? Do you feel that that's going to ameliorate a little bit of their frustrations, or they are going to continue to push until everything is completely, what they say, back to normal?
Well, I mean, I think there was already a pushback earlier today from the state Republican Party about the percentages that are being allowed. Why are restaurants being allowed 50%, but houses of worship are only being allowed 25%? I don't think in an election year, particularly when we know that Donald Trump has sort of targeted New Mexico and that there are some congressional races, they're hoping, you know, in the southern part of the state, they want to flip back to Republican. I don't think we see a kind of complete let up of that. But I do think that those new rules yesterday, they, you know, they have a kind of Rorschach test element too. Like, you sort of see what you want to see. And a lot of people I've talked to here in Santa Fe feel like, wow, I'm confused why this is happening. I don't know if it's a good idea for me to go out or not, versus, you know, maybe people in the other part of the state feeling like it's not enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So can't make anyone happy. That's why I think it's good to not be governor, is my feeling.
It's definitely a tough job, particularly during times like this. All right. We're going to keep our eyes glued to see what happens. I'm going to thank you so much again for joining me. She's Julia Goldberg with the Santa Fe Reporter. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
My next guest is a reporter with the Las Cruces Sun News. Algernon Damasa is on the line. Algernon, thanks for being with me again. How are you?
Good. How are you? Hello from Luna County.
You know, I'm doing okay. So we've got the primary on Tuesday, and we've got a national election coming up in November. What is the current state of people's faith in the federal government and governmental systems overall in the southern part of New Mexico?
The Doña Ana County Clerk has requested that people really seriously consider applying for an absentee ballot rather than voting in person in order to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19. People have responded to this in great numbers. The county clerk's office reported Thursday morning it had processed more than 15,000 applications for absentee ballots and had sent out over 6,000 absentee ballots. And unfortunately, what you're seeing now is a push to question the reliability of absentee voting, especially given that there's been some history down here. In 2018, the election for our U.S. congressional seat in New Mexico's 2nd congressional district came down to absentee ballots. There were over 8,000 ballots in that election, and it pulled the winner, Democrat Xochitl Torres-Small, over the finish line. And ever since then, her Republican rival in that election, Yvette Harrell, has made a claim that the election was stolen and that there was some misconduct or incompetence. However, those claims have never been tested in a court. It's just been aired in campaign ads and rhetoric.
The federal government, the governor, can make decisions, but it really comes down to those on the local level. What's going through the voters' minds, in your opinion, when it comes to making these decisions as far as there's local representation, understanding that the decisions they make are going to affect their lives?
Well, in southern New Mexico counties outside of Doña Ana County and Eddy County, you have many counties that have very few cases, and Hidalgo County actually has no cases currently. And so the reality of the coronavirus is very different for someone in Luna County or even Doña Ana County, where there are 440 cases, than it is in, say, McKinley or San Juan counties. But we're under the same restrictions. And so I think you have more voters down here who feel that the policy goes too far or hasn't been sufficiently differentiated. And that's a factor in people's decisions. You have a very potent argument down here about overreach and people who are very receptive to that message. And then you have the Cowboys for Trump that is having rallies in public and encouraging people to gather and to suggest to people that the dangers have been exaggerated, possibly on purpose.
Now, are there any particular races down there that you're keeping an eye on that kind of highlight what you're speaking about?
Once again, the race for the U.S. House seat in the 2nd Congressional District is being watched nationwide. This is a seat that's long was considered a traditional Republican seat, and it was won by a Democrat in 2018. Now, Xochitl Torres-Small has occupied that seat as a centrist. She's a blue dog Democrat. She's really emphasized governance and working across the aisle on border security and such. Republicans, of course, are very passionate about reclaiming that seat, and it is a more conservative-leaning district overall. The primary on the Republican side for that seat has really come to emphasize loyalty to Donald Trump's policies and his style of leadership. So the decision that Republicans appear to be making is about getting a representative who really backs the president on issues like the border wall and, of course, his COVID-19 approach. And the question for voters in November will probably be, which model of leadership do you want? Do you have this bipartisan moderate, or do you have somebody who's just fully behind the president 100%?
As always, it's a pleasure to have you. He's Algernon Damasa from the Las Cruces Sun News. Thanks again, my friend.
Thank you, Khalil. Stay safe.
You too. On last week's episode called Race, Privilege, and Reopening, I spoke with national anti-racism activist Tim Wise about how white supremacy plays into the call to reopen the economy. Toward the end of our interview, I asked him about the importance of the general election coming up in November. I want to ask you about how do you see the future of the United States playing out? There are some who believe that this election in November will be a true telling of the direction that we're headed in as a nation. What is really at stake? What do people need to be aware of as they consider casting their ballots?
I mean, I think that we are at a turning point in American history that is unlike any that we've had, really, possibly since the Civil War. And that's saying a lot because a lot of history has happened since. But in terms of the sort of fork in the road as to what direction we're going to go, there is literally a divergence between those who believe in and are willing to fight for multiracial, multicultural, pluralistic democracy, and those who, by their own admission, want to take us back to a fictional time of nostalgic greatness. I mean, when you have as your slogan, "Make America Great Again," by definition, you are saying that you want to return to something that you think was glorious in the past, even though we all know, if we're paying attention, that America was never great for people of color. It was never great for women of any color. It was never great for LGBTQ folk or for poor folk. It wasn't great for children that were working in mines and factories in the early part of the 20th century. It wasn't great for religious minorities. So really, these are folks who were saying that their political project is fundamentally incompatible with pluralism and democracy. So that's where we are. This is no longer, you know, a sort of Democrat and Republican debate over marginal tax rates and differential foreign policy and, you know, what kind of health care we're going to have. That those debates are not even really at all what drive politics right now. This is an existential crisis for the country. What kind of country are we going to be? And if we do not choose to move forward toward multicultural, multiracial, pluralistic democracy, we are going to slide into the kind of authoritarian neo-fascist politics that many of these folks on the far right openly acknowledge they believe in, whether it's the folks in Charlottesville or whether it's some of these folks with their, you know, with their camo and their guns and their rocket launchers on their backs and their open call for violence. I mean, there are folks right now who are openly calling for the assassination of the governor of the state of Michigan because of the lockdown orders, and none of them have been arrested yet. This is terrorism. You're not allowed to threaten the life of elected officials in this country, but folks are doing it under their real names on social media, and they haven't been arrested. We know full well if they were black or brown, they'd be in jail. If they were Muslim, they'd be in jail. If they were leftist of any kind, they would have been arrested by now. But these far-right reactionary people who admit they don't believe in democracy, who want the president of the United States to, you know, roll tanks into the networks and shut down the news. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they say that they want to do. So this idea that we're somehow this country that is untouchable, it could never happen here. You know, it's happening. We're just like the frog that's put into boiling water, but very, very slowly. And the temperature keeps getting turned up. And, you know, pretty soon we're dead. So this is a pretty important moment. And I hope people realize it's not just a normal election. That's for sure.
All right, looking at my iPhone, it's about that time for resources. Find a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Read more from Tim Wise by heading to timwise.org or head to speakoutnow.org for more. Hit up the Santa Fe Reporter to read work from Julia Goldberg and Catherine Lewin. That's at sfreporter.com. Reveal News has a story about which states got PPP money. Just head to this episode for YNMG at KUNM.org for that link. And you can watch Gene Grant on air at New Mexico PBS. And if you want to watch past episodes of New Mexico in Focus, just head to NewMexicoPBS.org/productions/NewMexicoInFocus. And don't forget, the primary is on Tuesday. To read the League of Women Voters online voter guide, head to this episode's post at KUNM.org. Next week, we air at 7 p.m., same days, different time. You can hear us on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays on KUNM's airwaves. As always, you can find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. Theme music by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. It's produced by yours truly. Shout out to Newsroom Director Hannah Colton for helping out with the editing. Thank you so much, Hannah. You rock. I'm Khalil A. Colonna. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, thanks for listening and have a good weekend.